Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Did I Save? This is a podcast about the way games change and the way games change us. Next to me here is my co-host, Ryan Parker.
I'm Ryan.
And over here, not so next to me, is my other co-host, Taylan.
Hello.
Hello, Taylan.
Hello.
Today, we're going to talk a little bit about hidden gems. My two co-hosts here have generously only decided to do two games today to give me so much extra time to talk about my three games.
That's not true.
And
we just want extra time to talk about
we'll see
our hidden gems.
So hidden gems to me, when I thought of this idea, it's very much about games that hold up. They have to stand the test of time. Mm-hmm. I want anybody who listens to this to be able to hear Taylan cough.
So sorry. And,
to be able to go back and try these games and be like, yeah, these games definitely hit.
Yeah.
They're awesome.
Yeah.
So when I'm talking about hidden gems, a lot of them are older, but not all of them. And they're just games that I go back to and I'm like, man, I can't believe this game has held up so well. So good.
Mm-hmm.
And with that, Ryan, tell me a little bit about your first hidden gem.
My first one is a game that hits nostalgia, but it is a new game. And it is designed to hit nostalgia. And that is Coromon.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Good one.
This is a game I have played on your recommendation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I played it, and I don't even know where I even first saw it, but I bought it on Steam first, and then I got it on Switch, which is much more enjoyable because it is.
I have it on Switch. It was on such a deep sale that I just got it for basically free.
And you can probably guess from the name exactly what this game looks like, but it is Pokemon, and it is more reminiscent of old school Pokemon. So it's made for the fans of Pokemon, but the people that don't like the direction Pokemon's been taking. But so it feels more like a Pokemon
Gold. So it's for everyone.
I guess.
Yeah.
Feels more like a Pokemon Gold or Silver.
Okay.
Or maybe like a Ruby and Sapphire, which to me is where that series is at its peak.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure that like diehard Pokemon fans will disagree with me, but fundamentally I think that this will scratch the exact same itch as if you went back and
played
those
games.
Did it?
Yeah. It was like, I would want to go back and play Gold and Silver, probably out of any Pokemon game. Mm-hmm. But then I didn't feel the need to do that after playing Coromon. I was like, this is great, actually.
How deep into, you know, like EVs and IVs and like breeding and all that stuff does Coromon go? Does it get that granular with the
way Coromon you progression? Breed in this is a little simpler than, I don't think you breed, but you are trying to catch perfect grade level Coromon, and they change color in three different variations depending on how potent is what they call it. And the more potent you are, the closer to perfection your Coromon is. And they do it on a scale of 1 through 21, 21 being perfect. And there is a character in the game, a scientist you find pretty early on, that will raise the potency level of 1 of your Coromon. So if you find a level 20 in the wild, you can just raise it to 21 and it's perfect. Mm-hmm. So 20 is considered perfect by the community because you can just catch it and then raise it to 21. Boom, it's perfect.
Nice.
And you can always tell in the wild what potency it's near by the color it is. But a 21 will always be a specific color. And then I can't remember where it is on the cutoff on the other two colors, but there's like common and then potent. And those are each like 1 through 11 or something like that. And then 12 through 20 is your second color, and then 21 is your final color.
And what does that affect exactly? Is it stat growth or their fun or like base
it
stats?
It raises, you have, the thing I like about Coromon is they switch up leveling. You actually have two experience bars. So you level up just level 1, 2, but then you have a potency level bar that actually lets you put stat points wherever you want them.
Mm-hmm.
So the higher your potency bar, the more points you get by the time they're max level to put stats wherever you want. So you don't need to breed like in Pokemon.
You for...
In Pokemon, you're breeding for the perfect personality type that you're looking for, and then the perfect stat ratio that you're looking for.
Okay.
And that takes forever to breed, but Coromon speeds all that up. Mm-hmm. You just need a perfect, and then you can put those points where you want them.
Okay, so does it, graphically, does it look like the old school Pokemon
it's
games?
It's a bit like an updated... Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But it's
a little more.
So it's not like actually black and white and.
No, no. It is
very
in color, but it is like the pixelated style of the game. It looks really cool. Like I said, the designs I think are really interesting and unique, but I think in general they've taken the key ideas from the old Pokemon games, like IVs and EVs, and made them, they've surfaced them in a way that makes them easier to understand, but also more intuitive to do.
Yes.
I don't actually want to breed Pokemon for 100 hours just to try and get the one I want, so that I can then go through a whole new loop of leveling them up and getting them where
I want. Yeah, the combat system isn't there for me to be doing that, breeding and stuff like that. Yeah. To me, it's more about collecting them.
Very much about the strategy.
And, yeah. But I just want, I love seeing a new Coromon and be like, man, I love that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, sometimes I hate it. But that's also Pokemon. I mean, look at Mr. That's Mime and Mr. Mime and Jinx from the original 100.
Yeah.
Mr. Mime is so bad he's good to me, but Jinx
he's
is
so
not.
Bad he's bad to me.
Yeah. He's so bad he's bad.
That's fair.
Huh? Yeah.
Yeah, he's not going to win any awards.
But Pokemon, everything they've been doing has been taking me away from Pokemon.
Yeah.
The designs of the Pokemon.
Yeah.
After the third generation still had a lot of good looking ones for me.
Yeah, I agree.
And then
it's not like they're all bad. That's not what anybody's saying.
But each.
It's just overall, I do not like the direction of the new designs.
Yeah.
They went from unique creatures that look like their own thing. They're very iconic. Yeah. They're very recognizable.
They're
to like, I'm a chandelier. I'm an ice cream sundae. Yeah. I'm a trash can. Why are all these human things that have evolved into animals? It doesn't make
sense. It felt like they were out of ideas and they looked around the room and
that's literally what it felt
like. Objects in the room.
The intern needed one more before he could leave for the day.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
But all of these, and while some of them may remind you of Pokemon, they're all original.
Yeah. Okay.
They look great.
Yeah.
And
they don't, it's not like Power World in the sense that it's like, this is an homage. You just took a Pokemon.
Right.
And you added horns to it.
Yeah.
The Coromon do look
like they're each unique.
Yeah. Yeah. I think they did a great job of leaning into the style of Pokemon without copying the actual design.
It felt like the original creator of Pokemon jumped on board of this team. Mm-hmm. Like the original designer.
Yeah, I can see that.
Was like, it felt like he hasn't been a part of Pokemon for a long time.
Yeah.
And then he worked on Coromon or something.
And he had a bunch of ideas. He was like, let me in there.
Yeah.
So there's talk of a sequel. The company that made it was like, you know, we didn't really expect this game to be popular. And I think it's still considered a hidden gem. It doesn't have a lot of reviews on Steam.
Okay.
But it is on pretty much anything. I don't know if it's on Xbox or PlayStation, but it's on Steam and Switch.
Yeah, I'm not sure
and
either.
And mobile.
Yeah.
So
I think just to clarify for me, hidden gems, like if they are good enough to go back and play now or good enough to go play if they're modern, then they're going to have a following. There's going to be some level of people who are like, yo, this game rules.
Yeah.
So I'm not expecting for our audience members to understand. I'm not expecting any of these games to be like, no one's ever heard of this game.
Right.
Only came out in Japan and the developer died and they lost the rights to it and it was only out for a month.
Yeah.
Like it's nothing
crazy.
There's
only 50 copies out there.
Yeah. I think Coromon's actually a really good example of like the level of popularity I'm expecting. Because when you play it, you can see.
If you've been if you've been out of Pokemon for a while because you haven't liked the direction of Pokemon, you probably haven't heard of Coromon.
Okay.
These are games that just didn't have a marketing budget.
Yeah.
Right.
Basically.
Yeah.
Great games with
people
little
that like that should check it out.
If you're 100%. Looking to jump back into a Pokemon game and you don't want to just play some old Pokemon game, this game, I think, takes a lot of those concepts. It has a lot of puzzles in it that some of them feel a little like, you know, anybody could solve these. Some of them are a little more complex. Some of them are more about timing.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are a little frustrating.
Got him.
But yeah, it's a great game.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Yeah.
I also recommend it from what I've played. Definitely not as deep into it as you, but I've played enough to know that it's a hidden gem.
I beat it through twice, and the last update that I heard about, they actually changed like the ending.
Oh, really?
And I heard it was in a good way.
So. Oh, good.
Okay, cool.
I'd have to go back and play it to see the new ending.
Yeah, very cool.
Okay.
Sweet.
Talon?
This is the game.
Tell me half of your hidden gems.
Funny. My game is a third-person action-adventure.
Mm-hmm.
It is...
Alpha Fallout. Protocol.
I don't know if you've... you know, I thought about that. Now you got me all mixed
up. Sorry. I derailed the whole conversation.
Talk about Halo.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
No. Hidden gem.
I thought about starting mine with Fortnite because I know people really need to hear about this
game. Yeah, exactly.
Let's go and play this.
No, mine is, and people say it different ways, but it's either Vampire or Vampire.
Oh, yeah. Okay. This I saw you playing it on Steam.
Yes.
This is a good choice.
It should have clicked. That would have been one of your... My brother Dawson played this game and loved it. I know that. I have not played it.
Oh, you haven't played it? Okay, I thought out of the two of us, or three of us, that you would have played it.
There's a game in the same theme that I don't know if it's on your list or not, so I won't say it or not.
It's not. It's, I know what you're talking about.
Okay. Yeah. Anyway.
Okay.
But it's entirely different. That's an entirely different.
Oh, yeah. Just the theme is the only.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, anyways, Vampire.
Tell me about Vampire.
Vampire.
I'll say it the pretentious way.
V-Rite.
That's right. Well, I thought it was called Vampire until I was like...
it's with a Y.
It is with a Y. For people
who can't see it.
Exactly. So it came out 7 years ago or so. Five or six years. I can't remember.
Pretty early in the PS4
era. Yes. Yes. Exactly. So action-adventure. You play as Dr. Jonathan Reed. You are a surgeon in the military. World War I is just ending.
Okay.
This is and you come back to London... and you actually wake up with a bunch of dead bodies.
Mm-hmm.
And you find out that you are a vampire.
Mm-hmm.
So you just wake up in a room with a bunch of dead bodies.
Well, you wake up like in a trash pit. Oh, like really? Somehow, yeah. You're like on your way back from the war.
Mm-hmm. The room is a trash pit.
So your character doesn't know when they turn to a vampire.
Correct. He like wakes up.
Yeah.
He doesn't know what's going on. He's all, you know.
Interesting.
Don't know how you contracted the disease.
Yeah. And so...
then you remember that guy that's like, come over here into my house.
Let's count.
That's all clicking for him now.
Yeah. How many bodies?
I won. Yeah. And then, of course, London at this time, the Spanish flu is becoming an epidemic.
Okay.
So you're a vampire.
This game's cool.
It is. It's very cool.
So far.
I love the setting.
My cousin introduced me to this game.
Have you played it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
This is really good.
Gotcha. The thing is, the moral choices in this game are really intriguing because you're a doctor who specializes in blood transfusion that you learned through the war.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're a vampire.
Mm-hmm.
What a coincidence.
What a coincidence.
Mm-hmm.
I love that setup. It's so cool.
Yeah.
So, obviously, you come to a dilapidated hospital. They don't have any... they have barely any doctors left.
Mm-hmm.
And you're trying to figure out if you need to feed on these people or help these people. Mm-hmm. The only way to gain experience, I mean, you can get experience, I think, other ways, but the big way to gain experience is through the patients you're taking care of.
Mm-hmm.
So you cure their blood or their diseases if they have like some kind of infection or if they have like sepsis or like the Spanish flu. Mm-hmm. If you cure them, the cleaner their blood level, the more experience you get.
Mm.
So you have to dictate whether you're going to either save this person or you're going to heal them only in turn to feed on them, to gain experience, to become a more powerful vampire because you're trying to figure out what happened.
Mm-hmm. And obviously the twist that lies within that is you have to spend a lot of time with these people, getting to know them, healing them and helping them before you decide whether you then want to kill them.
It's this huge slippery slope because if you kill too many people, then the certain regions of the map will fall into disarray and then they'll start killing each other. And then there's other vampire breeds out there that will come and attack and...
Remind me, so the people that you're feeding on, are they all unique NPCs? Like, none of them are just random people, right? They're all scripted characters.
They're all scripted characters. So they all have their own backstory. They all have other characters that they care about. Like, there's two people in the hospital that really care about each other.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously, they have their own, issues or whatever. So if you kill one of them, the other one will notice and then start to ask questions.
Hmm.
So it's like, well, do you just kill two of them? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, but, yes, and it's got combat and exploration. And I actually do like the combat. I know people are kind of ambivalent.
It's a little loose. It's a little bit, I didn't think it was bad.
Does it let you just go one full way or the other? Like, can you just feed on everybody? Or is it just you have to find a balance?
You can find a balance.
Do you have to find a balance?
Well, it's up to you. You can go all in, or you can just not feed on anybody and heal everybody.
Yeah, that's my question.
Oh, yeah.
Feeding on too many people will basically like weaken the region and bring in other threats. Mm-hmm. So yeah, you just have to be careful in that sense of like, don't open yourself up.
Kind of reminds me of Dishonored, where
I could see that. Yeah, you kill too many people, then the rats the epidemic plague. Kind of the plague becomes more prevalent. Yeah,
I forgot about that. Yeah. I'm not prepped to talk about this, so I'm probably going to get some of these details wrong. But that studio made a new game that is a spiritual sequel to Vampyr.
Right.
Came out 2 months ago. Have you played it?
Yeah.
Oh.
That's one of the games.
We'll move on then.
Speaking of twofers, this game's good and the sequel's good.
Yeah,
these are my two games.
I have three games.
I'm sorry, three games. I didn't.
These
mean
are
to,
two hidden gems. If you find one, you'll find the other.
Yeah, exactly. So
these are two sequential hidden gems.
But I don't think Vampyr got the marketing. And I think the time it came out.
I remember seeing some marketing.
I think the timing was bad. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that studio usually gets their timing bad.
I think the combat probably threw some people off. It's kind of one of those games that struck me like it's kind of a slow burn.
It is a slow burn.
So I think a lot of people fell off before they really saw what that game was.
Yeah.
Because it's really unique, I think.
I remember that game was pretty new. Dawson bought it for dirt cheap.
Yeah.
Because it went on sale quick.
Right.
But then he loved it. And I was like, oh, I'm surprised because it...
It does have one of my favorite openings in a game because it doesn't take long to get going, but it is a slow burn to like build up the relationships and stuff like that because you wake up in the pit of bodies. Then all you see is like black and white and you only see a beating heart and you realize that this person's calling out to you. And then you feed on them, and then you find out.
Is there like
it's someone you know?
Oh,
and then you start running away, and then it does like a little chase sequence and stuff like that. Like it has a lot of really cool stuff because you know, because it's like pick up this weapon, attack. Uh-huh. It doesn't do that. Like you do that, but in a way,
the way they weave it into the narrative makes it feel much
makes it more interesting. Logical. Yeah, yeah. So
I was going to ask, like, combat wise, like how much is it combat focused or is it more like planning on who you're going to feed and like social.
It's definitely more social interactions. Like it does have combat and I don't mind the combat at all. It almost plays like a light Bloodborne to me. It's got a dodging mechanic. It's a lot like Bloodborne where you just like strafe from side to side.
Do you feel powerful?
Especially like because you can earn blood abilities and you can do some like pretty devastating attacks and become a more powerful vampire. It's got guns. You can use like a bone saw as a weapon. Like it has a lot of cool elements. I just think people, like I said, probably felt pretty ambivalent to the combat because it wasn't as tight as something like Bloodborne.
That's not to me anyway. You can feel differently, obviously, but to me, that game is not the combat. That game is the way that it forces you, the moral ambiguity of having to consistently decide.
Yes.
Between hurting and helping people that you've already been getting to know over this course of this game. Like the combat is there and the combat is serviceable.
You could get rid of it and focus on the other elements.
100%.
You could definitely get rid of it.
Yeah. I think it.
But I like
it. I think it ties in meaningfully to what is happening. Like feeding off of them directly impacts your options of combat.
You got a near scenario.
Yeah, basically. It is necessary, but not the draw of that game. I've never heard anybody play that game and not come away thinking that it was.
And it has a ton of dialogue and the branches, but it's like if you kill someone too early and they still have like unlocked dialogue branches, you could learn something potentially.
Could point you in a new direction.
But if you killed them, that storyline's cut off.
Interesting.
So, yeah.
It seems like a game like this would have to have some good voice acting.
It does have great voice
acting. Facial animations, things like that.
The facial animations kind of hit or miss. It's like obviously they spent more time with like more central characters.
What's that detective game that really focused on facial animations?
L.A. Noir.
L.A. Noir.
I want to see some stuff like that.
Yeah, that would be incredible. Yeah.
Just give them Rockstar money. Why not?
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, didn't Rockstar make that game?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
They did.
That's why the facial animations.
not Vampyr. They made L.A. Noir.
Right. Yeah.
Throw Rockstar money at Vampyr's studio and see what they do.
Yeah. But I recommend it. Action adventure. but it does have a lot of dialogue. I don't know if
you're super into that. I like that as long as the dialogue is well written.
Yeah.
Not a game that would be for everybody.
It wouldn't be for everybody. It is a slower game, but it's got some great intrigue, lots of mysteries, good twists and turns, lots of moral choices. Cool setting.
Like, you don't see a lot of games in that time period, which I think is nice.
London, Spanish flu.
Yeah.
So
that's cool.
That was very good.
Okay.
Makes me think of, like, The Order, but it's werewolves.
Yeah.
Ooh, I forgot about The Order.
Same time era.
I like The Order a lot. Yeah. I think it was just.
But The Order is obviously pretty.
Oh, yeah.
Combat.
Was that game like 4 hours?
4 hours, yeah.
It's really short. Yeah.
They could have done some really cool stuff with it.
We should do best launch games, because I feel like all launch games are like that. Like, The Bouncer is like that.
That was a launch game?
3 hours, yeah, it was on PS2.
I knew it was on PS2. I didn't know it was a launch game, though.
Yeah.
Anyways, not too.
Almost positive. I'm never 100% sure of anything. I have way too much stuff bouncing around here to be sure of anything.
I think we're moving on to what everyone wants to hear.
Jared. Give me your number one.
But I'm gonna take the bait anyway.
Yeah.
Thanks, everybody. My first game is my most controversial one, because I think it's definitely not a game that, like, everybody will be into. Mm-hmm. But it's called 100 Days.
Okay.
It is a game about a person who's, like, it's kind of like Stardew Valley in the sense that it's, like, you're a person that works in the office. It sucks. You hate it. And you get a letter from your grandpa that's like, hey, I don't know if you remember me. Mm-hmm. I run a winery. I have my own vineyard.
So it's.
And he's like, I've spent my entire life trying to make the perfect wine.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm sick and I'm passing away and I'm giving it all to you.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to set you up the same way that I was set up when I first started. I'm going to give you one vineyard. And then when you perform well, I have asked other people that lived near me to help you move forward, basically. So when you get to this orchard, you are learning how to make wine from planting a seed all the way up to getting a distributor to carry your wine. Like, it is the full breadth of the process of making wine. And I personally do not really enjoy drinking wine, ironically, but I love the science of wine. I think it's super fascinating. And this game is, like, dead on when it comes to the details. Like, it is so accurate to the actual process that you're talking about, like, the pH balance of the soil and what kind of grapes do well in that soil.
I think you
soil.
Just put, like, grapes in a barrel and let it sit.
Well, you should play 100 Days to see how wrong you are. But the game, so it plays out like you get cards that represent all your actions that are available for that day, and the game moves in seasons.
Okay.
So you're not really doing day to day, you're doing more like month to month.
Cool.
And the board itself is a grid, like a 3x3 grid, and it's the whole space is three-dimensional. So around this grid is your vineyard. Like, there's like a gamified board, but outside of that, it looks like a stylized vineyard. You've got like rows of trees and all the buildings that you put your stuff in and hills and everything. It's very pretty, but your cards are all shapes, like an L shape or a T shape or whatever. And you have to fit as many actions as you can into this board to execute them as efficiently as possible.
Okay.
And so as the game goes, you'll expand that board and you can do more actions per month, basically. But you're not getting, it's not a deck builder in the sense that you're getting new cards. The cards are based on what you have already accomplished and what's coming up next. So when your like equipment starts to get dirty, you'll get a card that says clean equipment. And if you don't get that fitted into the board, it'll just continue to degrade and the quality of your wine will drop as well. So you don't have to include anything you don't want to, but the more stuff you leave out or the lazier you are about finding a way to fit it all together, the more difficult it's going to become down the road. But it's super interesting. The writing is fine as you're talking to these characters. There's a lot of story about meeting these people and understanding, like, where they come from and blah, blah, blah. But I like it because it goes so hard on actually teaching you the science of winemaking.
Yeah.
And being like, I feel like that is basically a crash course in how to make wine. Like, you could actually probably have a genuine conversation. And it's so interesting how many little details that they managed to fit into this game. Even like every time your wine is ready to sell, you design the bottle. You design the sticker. What kind of cork do you want to use? What kind of glass do you want to use? And all of that stuff is all that stuff is affecting your price. So the cost of everything is going up or down based on what you choose.
Yeah.
And the quality of the wine. And then the I don't know who it is, but an organization that rates wine will rate your wine based on how acidic it is, how many tannins there are, how sweet it is, blah, blah, blah. And you'll get a rating. And then based on your rating, people will order so much of it. And depending on, you know, you can say like, I want to make this much. I want to press this hard, this batch of grapes. And you'll get more. But because you're applying more force, it will also introduce more tannins, which you want less of. So everything affects something else in a way that's like, oh, I kind of see the science of this in a way that's really compelling to understand the artistry of winemaking.
Yeah.
Even if you never drink a bottle of wine, just to see all the effort and work and thought that goes into that stuff is really, really interesting.
That's cool.
That game came out maybe 3 years ago. I think it's got 800 830 reviews on Steam. I only picked games that had 20,000 or less, and this one has less than 1,000.
How many positive reviews, then?
It's mostly positive is the overall review.
Yeah. So somewhere like 80 to 90%.
Cool.
Probably, I would say. Yeah. And they have DLC, but more importantly, that game has been out for a few years, and they have every time, like it feels like every few months when I launch Steam, there's an update for that game. Like they have continued to update it.
Yeah. Well, that's important.
And make big changes, too. Yeah. Like, when I first played that game, it was kind of missing some oomph, you know what I mean? It was missing... It didn't have enough variety in the mechanics to really make it feel compelling. It started to feel kind of samey as you went. And they've worked hard to introduce new mechanics to make it more compelling. So I understand a lot of people, if you don't think, like, learning the really zoomed in aspects of something is interesting, then you're definitely gonna, you're gonna get school bus boarded out by okay, well this might be for you. As far as I know, you don't ever shrink down and go inside a grape, but I haven't finished the game, so
that's the next patch.
You do get definitely not that, but you do get upgrades as the game goes on. I highly recommend that game. You can catch it on sale often.
Okay.
I think by default it's $20.
Okay.
So
yeah.
I highly recommend that
game. How many hours would you say you're getting like out of that game?
It's tough because it's a lot, it plays mentally a lot like Civ, where you're like, oh, I could do this better. And you want to go back and keep, but the loop can hypothetically go as long as you want.
Does it have a campaign that like you finish?
It feels a bit like almost like it's kind of a legacy game in the sense that like you can play as if you are generations. Even once the story's done, you're constantly trying to improve on where you were before. So you can effectively play indefinitely. You're going to get at least 50 or 60 hours out of that game before you're like, there's really not anything left to do in this game. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It just depends on how compelled you are by the tiny little details.
Yeah.
Like how granular is important to you will decide how much you get out of that game.
Okay.
Sounds cool.
Yeah.
Tell me more about your game.
The other half of my hidden gems.
The other half.
My name's Ryan. And I'm here to say, if you like Final Fantasy Tactics or Fire Emblem, this puts a bit of a spin on the genre, and it adds a survival spin where you're having to fight waves of enemies. Do either of you know what I'm talking about?
I don't know.
The Last Spell.
Ooh, I was wondering if you were going to include this game, man.
The Last Spell.
Yeah.
I think it would classify as a hidden gem a bit.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Okay.
I have never heard of this game.
Oh, yeah.
There's actually some DLC coming out for it. I just saw where they're adding like a whole new race.
I'm waiting for the board game. I will play the video game, but they're making a board game version of it.
That does look pretty,
really cool.
Pretty good.
Ryan, since I have not heard about this game, tell me about it.
It is grid-based. Like, you know, we don't talk about a lot of grid-based games on the tactical strategy.
Yeah.
No, not us.
None of us are really that interested.
Yeah.
It's a bit like XCOM where you get to name your characters. You get to customize the way they look. So I've made a character named Talon.
Hey.
And I've made him look like Talon.
Don't celebrate. He's dead.
I've made a character named Jared. I've made a character named Haley and Dawson. Yeah. And you were like my spear guy.
Solid.
Talon was, or Jared was my archer. And you were an elf.
Seems appropriate.
I'll take it.
Yeah.
I don't know why that seems appropriate to you.
Which I think by making them an elf, you just like choose their ears and you can give them like little elf ears.
You seem like you would be a long distance kind of guy, is what I'm saying.
I don't like that. I've decided I don't like that.
My guy always has like the two-handed axe or the two-handed sword.
Yeah, see? Doesn't that seem appropriate?
Yeah.
No. What?
Get out is of there here. A class that runs away? That would be yours.
Yes, there is.
I'm just kidding.
There's a class that runs in and just dies, and that's you.
I'm the suicide bomber.
Yeah.
But you manage like a town village, and you're trying to get these. There's like some wizards in the middle of your town, and they're casting a spell. And you have to let them cast this spell. And the enemy is throwing waves and waves of like zombie, undead, like creatures of tons of varying types at you. And the further you progress in this game, the more unique creatures you find that you have to deal with and learn on the fly. But a big thing about this game is losing and learning why you lost and starting over. And now you can expect these enemies that you learn from and prepare for them. But it is you have two phases where you're building and you can take as much time as you need and you have resources. And then you have the battling where the waves are coming in. And then when the waves are done, you have another build phase. And then you have to survive several waves of this. And you feel like there's no way you can win. And you're barely scraping by. And you've lost Talon. And you've lost Jared. And now now you're...
Shouldn't have made me long range.
Yeah.
I was supposed to be up in there, bro.
But the combat feels so satisfying because you get these characters and they have traits that they have. And you can change their class based on their... Well, you change their class based on their traits. But they start off with a class. And it doesn't have classes, but the weapons you equip them with determine what skills they have.
Okay.
And then you can find new weapons with new skills, and there's even weapons I haven't seen before because I need to play more of this game. And they're also adding DLC that adds dwarves. I don't know what that means entirely, but I'm sure I haven't looked fully into the DLC yet, but I'm sure they explain some of that content coming out.
So it's I don't think you said this already, but just to clarify. So I think one of the things that makes this game really cool is the tower defense element is that like your castle is getting upgraded over time and you have armaments and stuff too, right? Like
you can passive build,
automatic weapons that will
you
fire.
Can build turrets and the turrets shoot after the enemy moves.
Mm-hmm.
So the enemy gets their turn, they move towards everything and then your turrets fire off.
They'll move up like two squares on the grid.
Yeah.
But they're coming at you from all
they'll
directions,
come
at, right?
When you're in the build phase, the map will tell you what direction waves are coming from. Sometimes it's all four, and you'll see.
So they're not coming down a path like some tower defense.
So
games.
If you it's focus on one side, then you're gonna die. Okay. So you have to spread your wealth around the town and upgrade all the way around. Mm-hmm. But if you play it and you lose, you can pretty much remember where the waves are coming from, so you know where to invest your money. So you know which sides.
I like that about tower defense
to develop
games.
Yeah.
I like the cycle of like getting better. But the twist is that, yeah, exactly.
Your characters are randomized.
But when they level up, they are permanently leveled up, right?
Yes.
So you might have to start over with the upgrades for your base, but your characters will maintain as long as they don't die.
No. Once you start a new match, you reroll new characters.
Okay.
Your characters do not carry over because when you start the game, you have like you have an overworld map and you have different villages that you need to defend.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called the last spell because these wizards are trying to cast the last spell. And you have to let them finish that to basically shut down the zombies.
Mm-hmm.
So if they can finish the spell.
The whole point is that they're inside your base and you're protecting them.
Correct.
Yes.
If the zombies will get too... the middle and kill the wizards and you lose.
Okay.
And the wizards are very weak. And you can upgrade the wizards to get more wizards. I think you might be able to upgrade their health too. But so you start off with one, and you can buy another.
What's better than one wizard?
And buy another.
It's two wizards.
Yeah. It's two wizards.
Yeah.
It's two wizards.
Yeah. So you okay. So I didn't fully understand how the characters themselves worked, but they're learned. They have like a skill tree.
They
like
do.
And, you're and actually like leveling them up like an RPG.
When they level up, you have like a list of perks you can choose from that raise like their magic damage or their melee damage or their critical hit chance or range and things like that. And so you can keep, you have like a certain amount of rerolls you can do if you don't see the right one. And then they also have like a secondary attribute page that you level up that has a different list of things. Mm-hmm. So each level has like two levels with it. And then you are also trying to upgrade your shops in your town. And then you have, when you kill enemies, if you kill a bunch of enemies in one spot, they create body piles in your build phase. You have a certain amount of villagers that can dig up for loot in those body piles.
Oh, cool.
So you'll see.
I thought like you were going to say it like makes it easier for them to climb over the walls or something. I was like,
no. It'll actually create, if you leave the bodies there, the zombies have to destroy the bodies.
Okay.
To get past the bodies.
Huh. That's cool.
But you can also, the more villagers you buy and upgrade, the more you can buy items in the town. You can.
Oh, that's right. I forgot. There's like a city management.
There's a lot of resources to manage. You have like
that's cool,
gold, like and that. Then you have like the some sort of like it's just like building material things, and then you have villagers as well.
I like when games have two different layers of upgrades. Mm-hmm. One that's like, this won't necessarily determine if you win or lose, but mm-hmm. it will help you lean into a particular playstyle. And then below that one's like, these choices will decide whether you win or lose.
There's a lot of cool variations with the weapons and like the characters and classes you build. But you can build like sniper towers. You can give someone a sniper rifle and they can just like take out the big bad dudes that are giving you trouble.
An elf with a sniper rifle.
Yeah. There's a rogue that just like focuses on just pure critical attacks and evasion. So you just like go in the middle of all these enemies and take out the big dude. And then also get out in the same turn, which feels satisfying. The spear dude is like really good at hitting like in lines. The axe guy is like really good at, he can like, you get a move that like throws the axe. So you hit like in an arc or you have like a move that like smashes. There's like a hammer that can like combo AOE attacks into different areas. So it takes Final Fantasy and also makes it feel much more action packed.
Okay.
And
yeah, it sounds intense. Like there's a lot of stuff going on once that phase starts.
Yeah. I said Final Fantasy, I meant Tactics. I don't know if I said that. Final Fantasy Tactics.
Okay. It's like a hybrid of turn-based and real-time version of Tactics.
Yeah. It's not real-time, but it feels intense.
Well, like when it's playing out. Yeah. Oh, but that's right. I was thinking that the build phase happened and then they all just ran at you, but they're moving and then you're going. And then
they move. Your turrets now fire. And then now you have your movement and actions. And the game constantly reminds you if you're about to end your turn, it says, you have a hero over here that has a move left or an action left.
Oh, mm-hmm.
Do you still want to end your turn?
Yeah.
Or if you're
Leave me to juggle all that stuff.
Yeah.
I've got 1,000 decisions.
And your villagers are like your action points during your build phase. Like the more villagers you have, the more things you can do during the build phase.
That's really cool.
So you really need to be careful about where you invest your money, when you invest your money. Do you invest in the buildings? Do you invest in your characters? Or do you invest in your walls or your turrets? Things like that.
So do you feel like not to spend too much time talking about this stuff.
We have to. I only have two hidden gems.
Do you feel like there is room to really like lean into a particular playstyle that you prefer, or does the game want you to understand how to win? Like, is the game pushing you
like
to
Hades,
learn a very specific way? Okay,
you can.
That's what I'm wondering.
Yeah, like you.
What's Hades? I'm just kidding.
Just kidding. No, don't talk about it yet. It's my hidden gem.
Never heard of this game.
Yeah. Not so hidden if you've listened to the podcast.
That's right.
Yeah, okay,
so go ahead.
Definitely not.
You can definitely focus on different strategies to win. You might roll characters that may make you change your mind and lean towards a certain way. But you could totally just invest all your money into your walls and play it more like a tower defense game if you really want it.
I do really want it.
Yeah. And that can backfire. I'm interested to see if the DLC with dwarves, if they really focus on more building, if dwarves help you build like different structures, that'd be kind of cool.
Yeah. That would be awesome if they have like their specialty. like an artificer style or something.
So.
Yeah, I've been meaning to play that game for a long time.
Yeah. I picked it up for like $15. I don't know what it is right now.
Nice.
It's not bad. That game seems real cool, though.
It is. It's a hard game to put down because there's just like always something to do.
It's
like,
it's a one more turn game for sure. I can tell by looking at the trailer for it.
And it is, I recommend the game, but it is difficult. So if you're easily frustrated, maybe don't pick
it up. Cool. Save me $15.
Yeah.
But
no kidding.
It is stressful because you, like I said, you can name your characters and they have permadeath and you can invest a ton of money into a character. And
that's cathartic for me. And they can buy Talon.
I'm only putting Talon on the front line.
Everyone's named Talon.
I usually have people next to their significant others. So when someone died, their significant other saw them die.
Ryan plays these games for the tragedy.
Yeah, he does.
Man. Sometimes the next come, I just send them all out, and they don't do nothing. No. Man. They just die.
Skip their turn for some reason.
Whoops, and whoops again.
Yeah.
Oops, I pushed space bar.
All right, Talon.
All right, here's my second game. Is a game that has the most ironic name.
I almost forgot. What your game was? I forgot I spoiled it. I'm sorry.
No, that's actually a different game. Listen, but wait, I'm getting there. I'm getting there.
Okay, go ahead.
My second game has an ironic name because it's called Remember Me.
Ah, okay.
So, also an action.
My friend Brent, I think, is a pretty big fan of this game.
Yeah.
I never played it.
Okay. Came out on PS3.
PS3.
Action adventure. Kind of, it takes place in like Neo-Paris. Like a futuristic cyberpunk Neo Paris, and you play as Nilan, who is a. Did you ever play it?
Mm-mm.
Okay. You play as a mind hunter. There's this corporation, of course, and they
always a corporation.
Always a corporation. Evil, good, you know, whatever. But corporation that you can. I'm trying to think how to.
So what
they monetize memories.
Okay.
Basically.
Okay.
So you can store your memories or have your memories changed. If you
it's like in Eternal money. Sunshine, kind of.
Kind of, yeah.
Okay.
So, but you play as Nilan, who's a mind hunter, and she gets her memory wiped. So she's trying to figure out why. It has.
You probably don't want to know.
Spoilers. That's
if
right.
If you had your memory erased,
it's
you
like
don't
it's like
know.
An 8 or 10 hour game. It's pretty short. It has light exploration. It kind of has exploration in the same way of like Uncharted or Tomb Raider.
So this is like a third person.
It's a third person action game.
Okay. Is it a shooter?
It does have shooting elements. Okay. You have like not like a bionic hand, but a
an
gauntlet,
arm, an arm cannon.
Oh, basically, okay. Yeah, like a gauntlet that helps what you use to wipe people's memories.
Okay.
So, but it's, so you do have a little bit.
So if someone's shooting at you, you touch them and make them forget why they were shooting at you.
It was an idea that I felt like if they expanded on it, it could be really, really good.
Yeah.
But I love the music because it has like this French kind of.
Yeah, the setting seems cool.
Yeah, the setting's really cool.
That they match.
I don't even know if I've seen images of this game. So.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I'll have to look it up later.
I have approximately 2 images in my brain of this game.
Nice. And that's it. So, but it's mostly hand-to-hand combat.
It's got a very orange aesthetic.
It does, like orange and white and black and
brown.
No.
Yeah.
No, brown is out. No brown in the future.
But I really enjoyed this game. Like I said, it's pretty short, but it has a lot of cool twists and turns, but it has these sequences where you can go in and you start to manipulate people's memories and it plays out in real time and you can adjust things or events that happen in the memories and it changes how they feel or it changes their whole how they remember it. And it obviously plays into the story really well, but
what can you pick this up on?
It's PS3 only, baby.
Nope. You can play it on Steam.
Oh,
really?
Yes.
How is the port?
Huh? It's really good.
Okay.
It's really, really good. Yeah. And that was one thing when you were like Hidden Gems. You know, I went back and played some like Blood Will Tell and Chaos Legion on the PS2 and some really, really hidden gems.
Mm-hmm.
And they're one, they're not easily accessible. And two, So they just don't hold up.
Yeah, no. I did axe a couple of entries for accessibility that I was like, I just don't think people can get to this game.
Yeah, easily.
Ghost Squad was a shooter on the Wii U.
Okay.
Or it might have been on the Wii, but it was one of the two. And it was like a Time Crisis style shooter.
Yeah.
Like first person perspective. And it's arcadey, so everyone's just popping up and you have to shoot them as fast as you can.
Oh, okay, okay.
Yeah. But like no one except me and my friend Brent played
ever it. Ever played it,
but yeah. So it was really cool because you could, like, when you play through the missions, you will earn experience based on your score and level up the mission. And the next time you play it, new routes become available.
Oh, okay.
And, like, you earn, like, gear for your character. And, like, it's really stupid outfits. Like, you could dress up like a panda and stuff. It's, like, hilarious.
Yeah.
But it's on the Wii U.
Yeah.
And it's just... Actually, I think it is the Wii because you needed Wii remote. But was just like... No one's going to be able to play this. I can't really recommend this to people.
Right.
But man, what a game.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a shame. But okay, so Remember Me is like a third person. Is the combat is just shooter or is there it's melee?
It's hand-to-hand combat, hand-to-hand basically. Combat.
Okay, okay. Yeah. And does it feel so, kind of like Devil May Cry? Is that that's what I'm kind of imagining.
The combat is almost similar to like a... Batman games.
Oh, Arkham. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, that actually seems more interesting to me.
So, but I enjoy it a lot. It's a game I think about.
You think the story is worth revisiting?
I think so, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, when I went back and played it, I was like, man, this game is really good. Like, they just, I don't know. The setting, I think, really elevates it.
Mm-hmm.
And I really enjoyed the writing, but the music's really good. I do wish they would have expanded the world a little bit more.
You mean more exploration or like
more exploration? Lore? Yeah. Okay. And the lore, like it would have been nice to actually like kind of explore more of an open city, you know, in a way, like smaller levels, but more open, you know, not on an open world, just a smaller open levels to explore.
I think
that game really strikes me as a game that they expected to make a sequel to and then didn't get.
And they didn't.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It feels like a game that they were planning to build on.
Yeah.
And then they just never got the chance.
So
that's a shame.
It is.
The sequel is called Remember Me, but you pronounce it differently. Like, Remember?
It's called Forget Me Now.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
My next game absolutely rules. I love this game so much. It has like.
You love this game so much. I hate it.
Probably. I don't know if this is a game for you guys, but mechanically. I really like what it does a lot. The story is just incredible. It has like 4,000 reviews on Steam. The sequel is getting ready to come out soon.
Uh-oh.
And it's called Citizen Sleeper.
Interesting.
This game... Okay, so right off the bat, I have to say, like, imagine a game... The whole game is like menu-based, and you're... The only real interaction you have is you're on this giant ring in space... And the camera's like focused on one point of the ring, like pointing down at like an isometric angle.
Mm-hmm.
And you can use the scroll wheel to like scroll the space station and select different points on it of interest.
Yeah.
But other than that, there's nothing beyond that in terms of navigation. So imagine basically like an aesthetic that kind of looks like Steven Universe if it were like cyberpunk. And like had a grittier edge to it.
Okay.
That's what this game looks like. You are a person that is called, they call you a sleeper. And in the future, in order to explore space, I don't know if you've noticed, but we tend to reinvent slavery as quickly as we can.
Indeed.
And this game, people who are like deeply in debt will sell the rights to their consciousness to corporations that will take your consciousness and put it in a sleeper, which is like a cybernetic body.
Okay.
And then you are a robot slave. You're the property of this corporation. But you are still you. You have every memory that you had before. You are aware of what has happened to you. And basically, in order to keep you from running away, they have the equivalent of future immunosuppressants. You have to give yourself this drug. Otherwise, the body that your consciousness is in, the proteins will start to denature and you'll just fall apart.
Mm.
And so you are a sleeper that has snuck onto a ship to escape. Basically, you mine on this planet for resources.
Yeah.
And you don't know where it's going. You don't really care. You just sneak on. You and your friends plan this distraction. You collapse the mine shaft. And then in the chaos, you jump on the ship and sneak into a container. And now you've woken up on this space station called the Eye. And it's kind of out on the fringes of space where the corporation doesn't really go. Mm-hmm. And no one survived but you. And when you get there, you're like, well, what do I do now? And that's the premise of this game, is how do you survive when all the odds are against you on this space station where you have the opportunity to start a new life, but no advantages for you whatsoever.
Gotcha.
You have to figure out a way to get these immunosuppressants. You have to figure out a way to make money. You have three different systems that are always working against you. You have a condition, which is the condition of your body. And there's like a max bar that it goes down 2 bars per day. And then beneath that, you have your like health, basically, which is like how you have to eat food to continue to exist. And so your final bar is dice slots. And every day that you rest, you will get randomly rolled dice that will fill up according to how much condition you have left. So once you've lost like 4 condition, one of those slots will lock out and you'll start the day with only 4 dice instead of 5. Mm. And the only way to fix that is to get the immunosuppressants and get your condition all the way back up. And if you are starving, your condition will go down even faster.
Yeah.
But these dice, basically it's 1 to 6, of course. But when you are attempting any activity in the game, there is a range of how successful you will be based on which dice you choose to put in that slot. So if I want to go help this guy break down ships for parts so that he'll pay me money so I can buy food, I can put my 6 die in there and I am guaranteed 100% chance of a positive outcome. 4 to 5, I think, is like 50% positive, 50% neutral. Mm-hmm. So I won't get as much of an advantage, but nothing bad will happen to me. And then it goes down from there to the point where you have like 75% chance that you'll either get a neutral or negative outcome where you'll hurt yourself because you're so overexerted in this process.
Yeah.
And there's tons of people on this space station that are all in a similar situation to you. They all need help with different things. They all have their own unique stories. There's like a guy with his daughter. His wife has recently died, and now they were entered into a raffle where if you work for this company for X amount of days, they will put you in the drawing. And at the end of those days, if you're selected, you get to go on a ship and you still have to work while everybody else is in cryostasis. But when you get to the planet, it'll have been a decade for you and no time at all for the people who paid to get on there.
Oh, okay.
But then you'll get your freedom on this new planet. And so he asks for your help because he has to watch his daughter. And so he can't always work. And so there are days where he'll be like, can you watch my daughter while I work? And then there'll be days where he's like, hey, I have to take my daughter to the doctor. Can you work for me? And as you do these things, you're always fighting an uphill battle because you have to pick and choose which dice you want to put where and what risks do you want to take. And you level up as you complete stories. So there's no XP, but when you finish a story, a relationship with a character or an arc or whatever, you get to modify dice rolls. So if this particular activity requires an engineering skill and I have level 3 in that skill, I get +2 to all my dice that I put in that slot. If it's a 4, it'll be a guaranteed success at a 6. Mm-hmm. But I also might get a chance at extra money every time I do an engineering skill or whatever. So as you level up, you will get new bonuses that make things a little easier for you. And the game does such an incredible job of using these mechanics to really make you understand, like, it's a little bit open to interpretation, I would say, what the artistic intent is. But for me, it's very much about people who work in a system as people with disabilities, and the system is not designed to facilitate the success of people who have disabilities. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so it always feels like you're just a little bit too far behind. And, you know, eventually you find out that like your property, so you have a tracker built into your body, and the company that you ran away from has sent a bounty hunter to find you and bring you back. Mm. And unless you can figure out a way to disable that tracker, they'll keep sending people after you forever. Hmm. And there's lots of these really interesting, every story is to me completely fascinating. I love all the characters. I love seeing, I love seeing like how their stories develop, and it's very much a, I guess like a one more turn kind of game where you start to get in this rhythm of like, okay, I've got a path forward. I know what I need to do. And as you start working towards that, you're like, okay, bam, bam, bam. I've got a system down. I know exactly what I need to do. And then they'll throw a wrench and some new story development will happen. And they'll be like, not anymore, man.
Yeah.
And it's so fascinating. Just all around, like, it comes together as such an incredible package. And I can't believe that more people haven't played this game, because it is so good at what it is trying to
do. Does this game play differently every time you play it?
So who you decide to give your time and attention to will change what happens and what options are available to you. Because you're a robot, you can see the networks. So each piece of electronics on this space station is connected to each other. They all have unique IDs. So you can like click a button, and instead of seeing the space station, you'll see this ghostly silhouette of the space station with just the network of all the electronic devices on it. And you can access that and put specific dice in. So it'll be like, this requires a one die roll. And you'll put that in there, and it'll give you data that you can trade to other people. And you're learning about the history of the space station, because the space station's like hundreds of years old.
Okay.
So it's accumulated so much stuff. But there is an AI firewall that is chasing you. And every time you collect new data, it tracks you a little closer. It like is following your network, so to speak.
I think maybe your jacket is picking up an audio of it.
Is it?
Cool. Between the jacket and the chair.
Cool. Oh, yeah, the chair.
Sorry, man.
Chair's doing a number on me.
I picked the wrong chair.
Anyway, long story short, it changes based on who you decide to help and who you decide to ignore.
Okay.
But there are so many options available to you. You will have to ignore some people. You just don't have the resources to help everybody.
But it has a lot of dice.
Every day, like, you will get, basically imagine a board game where at the beginning of your turn, you roll five dice, and then whatever numbers they land on, those are the numbers you get to work with. And you take each die and put it in an activity.
So you can strategically place your bad rolls and your good rolls.
Exactly.
And, okay.
You're like, I have to do this thing today.
Yeah.
I have to make progress in this area, because there are a lot of clocks that are counting down. Ships that will leave if you don't help them, or people who will end up dying, or whatever the case might be.
Yeah.
So there are situations where you're like, I have to use this six roll here. I don't have a choice, which means I have to fail at this other activity, or at the very least get a neutral, or very best get a neutral outcome. So yeah, there are just so many things, like, you can replay, and there are multiple endings. So you can just keep replaying this game. And I feel like overall it is a fundamentally optimistic game. Like, it doesn't want you to feel bad about things, but it is honest about how things are. And I don't think many games do a good job of balancing those two philosophies. So it's like $20. You can basically always catch it on sale. They've added content to it. I'm pretty sure it's all free, but they've added a lot of new stories. And like I said, I don't think there's like a bad moment in this game in terms of all the writing and the characters and stuff. It's just fascinating to me. And I understand most people might be turned off by how limited the interaction feels, but I'm underselling for the sake of time. I'm underselling the skill tree that you level up and the different ways that skills will become modified
on Steam.
It's gorgeous. It's on Game Pass, I think. It used to be, at least. So it's, if you've got Game Pass, you can just try it out.
I have heard of it. I've never.
It's great. It's not that long. Maybe 8 hours, depending on how much you do. Yeah, okay. It's pretty short. And it's definitely
for me nowadays. That's like,
yeah, perfect. Exactly. That's kind of where I'm landing.
So I can't play everything, yeah, and not everything needs to be 100 hours long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
not everything has to be Baldur's Gate 3, guys.
Correct.
Yeah, yes, it's great. I can't recommend it enough. Yes, what? It does. Yes, it does.
If you're going to have that quality, then sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you're not, exactly. No. Yeah. Don't do it.
Mm-hmm. Larian is cut the back. A unique circumstance,
yeah,
of indeed. A studio.
Absolutely is.
I guess I just get to jump into my third game now.
I get to jump into my third game.
Ooh, Taylan, you came up with a third game?
I already told you. You already guessed it, remember?
You That's did true. Say you had two earlier.
Taylan, that was a whole Citizen a Sleeper. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That was...
What?
That was a whole Citizen
Sleeper. Well, I mean, I can talk about remember third. That. That you brought up.
I'll just okay. mention it. Okay, if you want to, yeah, go ahead.
V Rising.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah, cool. Yeah.
Do
if,
it.
If you think it's a hidden gem.
I don't think a lot of people know what V Rising is.
I agree. So okay. Talk about it.
And I think it's a good time to talk about it because they're about to come out with some new DLC or just did.
Well, it just came out of Early Access, this game.
Oh, okay. Is that what it is?
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So they are adding some new content to it, and that is... This game does a bit of a twist where mm-hmm. you actually play as the villain in the story. Mm-hmm. You are a vampire... and you're killing.
It's like a Diablo style
loot
grind.
Yeah, the RPG. Combat to me does feel like Hades, and I think we've talked about this game.
It does feel at least once. It feels more like Hades than Diablo.
Yeah. Once you get all the combat stuff unlocked, mm-hmm. it feels more like Hades.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I like the style of this game.
Aesthetically, I love it.
Yeah, yeah. I'm like,
and you play as a vampire. So
no, don't stop talking.
Throw me a battery.
Chuck it.
Now that we've got this on. I know, man. I'm so sorry.
If this is unusable, I'm going to cry.
No, not at all. It'll be fine.
Oh, it's usable.
It's usable. It's just not listenable. Can you plug
that in now? Oh, I listened to it.
You're not the target audience, Ryan.
I'm one of the 50.
That one's already recorded.
I know, but I'm going to start it over.
When you
start
that. Good call.
Okay, Ryan. Right. Sorry,
we were talking about
technical difficulties.
So it is a survival game,
V Rising,
which is when I think we talked about this game was on our survival episode. Mm-hmm. So you do gather wood and rock and
gin. It is a survival game.
Yeah, you have a blood instead of like hunger and stuff. You have blood and you have blood types.
Okay,
so you have like different bonuses depending on what you fed on, mm-hmm. and your whatever you feed on replaces what you fed on last.
And the purity.
And the quality level of it, the purity level of it. So,
so if you have a high purity animal that you eat, the mm-hmm. bonuses you get, you'll get more bonuses, and they'll be different than a high quality human.
Yeah, your percentages of those bonuses will be higher. So you have like movement speed, 5% for a low quality animal blood or creature blood. But if you get like you'll mouse over a creature and it'll say what quality it has, or a person or mm-hmm. whatever mm-hmm. you're feeding on. And you can just feed on rats if you can't find anything, but you just don't have any bonuses, but at least you're not going to die.
Okay.
So if you go too long without
blood... So you don't have any negative effects if you feed on...
Yeah. No, you just get less bonuses.
Yeah. Okay, cool. That's a good touch.
Yeah.
Because that would be annoying if you kind of got...
Yeah. And you can see... actually, you may need to level up to get that ability, but it'll tell you, like, this one has 96% purity or whatever.
You can pretty much... At the get-go, you can mouse over and see, but there is a mode you can go into once you unlock it where you don't have to mouse over anything. It shows you everyone's blood quality really easily, so it's really good. It's like hunting mode.
Okay.
If you need to... You can, like, see, like, a village of, like, 20 people and you just automatically see the highest one.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool.
And you can focus on that guy and get his blood. but the bit of a twist.
I just wanted to see if the camera was working and then I sabotaged the mic.
It's like I do love it because it's a survival game that totally mixes up the combat and the camera. So it's like, you know, like a Diablo style camera, Hades style, mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. the combat's like really fast paced.
It does a great job of adapting the base management of a survival game with like a Diablo style loot
and
grind.
You build like a vampire gothic manor.
Like you mm-hmm. build the floors, the walls, everything bit
and
by bit.
So when the game first came out, they only had one floor, but then they added a patch. You can build stairs and add like port, like a big open roof gardens and plant seeds and things like that. You can have like a dungeon where you have like prisoners of like that have different blood types and qualities, so you can just
feed you don't have to hunt them anymore.
You don't have to hunt them anymore. You can now just like have them in your gel cell and feed them and feed on them.
Put that nun in prison.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I need her.
You can literally put a nun in a jail cell. Yeah.
Interesting.
Just like you've always wanted.
Yeah.
It's everything I've ever wanted. Yeah.
And very cool. You can play cooperatively with a lot of people. You can play PvP as well. So you can do PvE or PvP servers. But you're fighting.
Technically.
Yeah. You're fighting. You're fighting vampire hunters.
Okay.
And
cool.
The good guys. And there's like paladins and there's like priests and there's just like. Like roguish type vampire hunters, like a Van Helsing type kind of guy.
I think that's the loop of that is really cool because each region has like a hero type character that when you kill them, they are like the next milestone to whatever gear you want to unlock. So when you kill one, now you have the ability to progress to like craft guns or whatever, which is really cool.
Yeah, that is cool.
Each boss has something you're going to unlock to progress your game. You're going to unlock cool features or like blueprints or weapons, things like, or abilities. And they also drop gems, which modify your abilities.
Okay.
So you can like, you have a reason to keep fighting bosses you fought before.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to finish those bosses off a lot easier and you're going to be able to farm them easier and things like that. But
I think it does a good job of structuring the tier of that stuff where it's like, it consistently and pretty quickly cuts out like busy work, like eventually you're able to just summon a horse. Mm-hmm. So you can just instantly
I see.
Instead of like having to go find a horse and bring it back and stable it and all that, you just summon a horse.
Just summon
nice.
There's a lot of cool weapon types that all have different abilities. Like when you first make your first sword, all you can do is slash with it, but then you get upgrades and then you unlock a special ability with that sword. And then you get two special abilities with that sword. And you can swap those out, or you swap out your spells. You have like two attack type abilities with your weapon, and then you have three spell slots as well. And you can mix those all up. You can add modifications to them, so you can really customize your combat. And a lot of the weapons behave differently. Mm-hmm. There's ranged weapons, melee weapons. There's like weapons that strike fast or strike strong. And the new DLC coming out adds Simon.
From Castlevania.
What?
Yeah.
As cool. Someone that you kill.
A pretty big get. Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome.
If you ever wanted to kill Simon.
Yeah.
So if you want revenge for Simon's quest as a as
yes, a kid, exactly.
So this game has now left early access, and it's been pretty great to play from the get-go, but they've been constantly adding quality updates to the game.
A big thing I'll say, like they're adding stuff to increase the longevity of the game, but something I actually appreciate about that game is you can finish this survival game. It is not so open-ended that you're like, it's intended
you
to
have
just
a goal.
Play.
Go on forever. Yeah. Yeah.
There you have like
you pretty
a
much
narrative
move
structure.
North. You start off at the very southern tip of the map, and the further you move north, the harder the game gets.
Okay.
And throughout the early access, they've been adding like new sections of the map.
Yeah.
With new biomes and bosses and things like that.
And it gets pretty tough.
It gets tough.
The bosses scale with how many players you have.
Yeah.
And that's maybe my one complaint that I can think of is that like some of them, I'm like, hey guys, don't join this fight because it's so much easier with one person. I'd rather do it alone.
Nice.
But like they're very interesting fights. Like all of them feel pretty different.
There's almost too much going on when you have a lot of players. Like if you're fighting a boss.
Yeah, because their attacks scale, not just their health.
Yeah. So like there's so much going on the screen. So to me, it feels like a really good like 2-3 player game. Once you start getting more than that, it's like maybe everyone has their own goals and teams that are doing different things. But,
yeah. It starts to, everybody starts to like be at different levels of progress where you're like, I need to do this fight. And you're like, we already did that fight.
Yeah.
And that's very far away.
Yeah.
But yeah, overall, I definitely recommend that game. We put quite a bit of hours into it.
Yeah.
It's very fun.
Sounds cool.
It is cool. It's a cool game.
And it's on...
And the studio...
PC?
PC. I don't
just PC?
I don't know if it's on consoles.
Yeah. Not yet.
Maybe.
Okay. Cool.
Who can say?
Yeah.
I'll have to check it out.
I'll throw that one out there.
So my last one is... Banishers, Ghost of New Eden. This is a game I think will become a hidden gem.
Yes.
So this is the successor to...
Spiritual sequel, they say.
To Vampyr. Yeah. So it has some tie-ins already. Like at the beginning, there's like a couple callbacks where there's a certain group that's part of this establishment.
Which is interesting because the story of this game does not seem to have a whole lot in common with vampires.
No. And it also takes place in like the 1600s or something like that. Like colonial stuff.
Okay. Okay. Really?
Yeah.
I don't think I realized it was a prequel.
I didn't either.
A spiritual prequel.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Whatever that
Interesting.
Means.
Yeah. So you play as two banishers. It is an action RPG. More like a light RPG. There are some like upgrading mechanics.
Or I was almost a banisher, but then I went into IT.
Nice.
Explain to me what
it's never too late to go back.
Banisher. So you play as two characters. You play as Antea and Red. And they're lovers. Or a couple. I don't know what you want to call them.
They're partners. Life partners.
Yeah. Okay. And so they are banishers, which means they basically destroy corporeal beings. So ghosts.
Oh, okay.
And, yeah.
Like an exorcist.
Ghosts. Oh. Right. Yeah, exactly.
Incorporeal beings. Non-corporeal.
Non-corporeal.
Okay.
Okay. What did I say?
You said corporeal beings.
Oh, okay.
But I didn't know if you meant like werewolves and stuff. So I was just clarifying.
Well, there's tons of creatures and stuff. Yeah.
Oh.
So.
Oh, I would just call them banishers.
Banishers.
Everybody knows what that
means.
They focus on the supernatural.
Basically, yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Supernatural. Anything that's supernatural.
Okay. Okay.
They're there to destroy it.
Okay.
So they get a letter from their friend, and they go to this new town called New Eden Town.
What a good name.
Right.
Oh.
Yeah.
You guys remember Old Eden Town?
I don't talk about all the events.
Anyways, so they find out their friend is missing when they get there, and the whole town is in disarray, and there's a lot of people missing.
Oh, no.
So that's basically how it starts. And it's in the trailer, but the female protagonist, Antea, gets killed. So now she becomes...
She dies?
A ghost.
I know all this. I'm just trying to gas you.
So she becomes a ghost.
I do not know this. So.
And that's where the dilemma comes in because you banish
her. Can I just banish her immediately and get in the game?
That's not the type of... Okay. That's not the dilemma.
So it's either that you will ascend her. But she has to have her body to be ascended.
Okay.
Okay. So she doesn't have her body because the big baddie ghost has it. Since she died.
Boo.
Boo. Yeah, exactly.
Indeed.
That'd be amazing. So it's basically Red going to try to either bring her back to life. But the only way to do that is for her to get life essence, which you have to kill people to get. That's where the dilemma is.
This reminds me of a game, Vampyr.
Have you played? Vampyr. I was about to say,
Interestingly enough, my hidden gem games are made by the same company.
Yeah. Capcom.
You really have a
Don't
type.
Nod.
Oh, it's Don't Nod. I did not realize that was
Capcom
maybe.
Published Remember Me, but Don't Nod made it.
Okay.
And I didn't really realize that until I was going through it, and I was like, wow. And it plays very similar to Vampyr.
Yeah.
Actually, the combat is more in lines with the new God of War games.
Oh, yeah.
Which I like. So
brutal.
Yeah, it's definitely not as good. You can definitely tell. It's a little bit more floaty. Yeah. So, but
that combat in the new God of War is good.
Yeah. So.
Oh, I thought you were saying the new God of War combat is not that good. And I was like,
no.
What are you talking
Banishers.
About? Okay.
Banishers, yeah.
Okay.
So, but you get to like explore villages and of course you meet people and they have all these secrets and they're the reason why the big giant baddie is
a baddie.
Created. Yeah, okay. Exactly. Mm-hmm. All their hidden secrets and of course not everybody's a bad person, but they did things. That maybe have not been the best of choices. Or they did things to save some part of the village by doing some questionable.
So do you have a singular village that's like your hub that you come back to?
I don't know.
Okay.
To be honest. Like you keep exploring and you've come to other villages and then you explore some woods and there's some waterfalls and
okay.
But it's cool because you can switch between Antea, the ghost, and Red simultaneously. or like instantaneous. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. So like in combat, she can actually fight. Like you use, so you like slash with a sword, and then you'll switch to her, and she'll do like this ghostly punch or whatever, and then you can switch back to Red. So you can like do like different kind of combos interesting. Together.
Okay, I didn't realize the combat was that interlinked.
Yeah, between I didn't either. Okay. But I really like their dynamic because they don't really know what to do. Mm-hmm. Like they've obviously never been.
This is uncharted territory.
Right. Yeah. Where she's like, "Well, you just need to banish me," and he's like, "I can't do that." And she's like, "I don't know if I want you to." You know what I mean? And then he's like, "But we should." Mm-hmm. But should I don't we? Know.
One of the interesting examples I heard in another podcast I was listening to is like. When you go to bed at night as mm-hmm. Red, like when you sleep, mm-hmm. Instead of like cutting to the next morning, it like does a time lapse of you sleeping as mm-hmm. Red and her, she doesn't sleep anymore. Yeah, so she's just like around. Aimlessly walking around the camp for like 8 hours.
Yeah.
It does a good job of communicating like she doesn't really know what to do with herself.
Yeah.
And like, like you said, like it's just a very unknown place to be for both of them.
Yeah. Which is interesting because she's like, you're basically learning how to become a banisher mm-hmm. from her. Like that's how it kind of starts.
Okay.
Like he's has like war experience but he's like wanting to become a banisher to help people. But she was like training him basically and she dies. So now she's teaching him through this ghostly way.
Yeah.
And he's like, "I wish you were here." And she's like, "I wish I was here too." And she just, like you said, she doesn't really know what to do with herself. So she's kind of like lost in limbo almost.
Yeah. It's interesting. So one of the examples that I thought does a good job of illustrating what I think is cool about this game mm-hmm. is like same as Vampyr, like they give your choices a lot of weight.
Yeah.
Which I think is both very impressive and hard to do.
Yeah.
But one thing they do is like one of the characters is like a blacksmith mm-hmm. and their partner, I guess, is sick or something's going on with them. You have the choice to like banish them, their partner, for life essence, like for her. Mm-hmm. And if you do that, then the blacksmith is like every time you need something from them, like every time you want to craft mm-hmm. something or whatever, they're like, "Yeah, sure, I'll take care of that for you. Why don't you pay me 3 times my normal rate?"
Right.
"Because you killed my partner."
Right.
Like, it has, like, mechanical consequences, not just narrative consequences for all these choices you're making. I think it's really interesting that you have to sit in the decision you've made. Like, every time you go to this blacksmith,
turn the console off.
Well, when you're playing...
Yeah, because the only way to resurrect her is like this very specific ritual, but you have to sacrifice a lot of people to mm-hmm. get a lot of essence to even bring her back. And there's a chance that it may not work.
So you know what this kind of reminds me of? I don't know. Maybe this is a bad example because I haven't played Banisher, so mm-hmm. I don't know. But it feels like a supernatural version of Way of the Samurai. Do you remember those games?
Yes, I love those games.
Where like everything, the whole game is just a sandbox where the whole point is to play in this idea of everything you do has a consequence.
Right.
Everything. Mm-hmm. And that's what I find most appealing about a game like Banisher is like, I want to have to wrestle with the aftershocks of the decisions I make and not just like make a singularly hard decision and then move on.
Right.
Like I think that's really cool and not a lot of games do that.
Because it's either you can like banish the ghost, ascend the ghost, or you can blame the human. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of your thing. And then this is a funny that I read someone that pointed this out and I never even noticed, but when he banishes somebody, he says, "Be gone." And the acronym for the title of the game is "Be gone."
Oh, interesting.
So, Banishers, Ghost of New Eden.
Okay, sure.
They
worked gone. Really hard for that one.
They did. They did indeed. Okay, cool. Unless they wrote it and they were like, "Oh, yeah." But like, nah, they did it on purpose. They did it on purpose.
That's why it's called New Eden.
That's exactly right.
Mm-hmm. They were like any town with an N and an E.
But I'm really enjoying it. I really like the dynamic between Entei and Red. They've got a really cool...
You feel like it's pretty well written?
Like it's definitely well written. Definitely my favorite part. Like, I like the combat.
I feel like that was true with Vampyr. So.
I think the exploration could do with a little bit of work. There's a lot of climbing walls and a lot of three, like third person action games where you're like scuffling through the side of a cliff, or you're going underneath
hidden something. Loading screens where you're like, why am I climbing through this rock pass?
Yeah.
Just let me go.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I like it. It's a pretty game. It's really well written.
That's definitely a hidden gem. Cause I have not heard, I've heard literally one person talk about that game, and that's it.
So, and I think that definitely will become a hidden gem.
It's cool. Sure. That game is, game's neato.
Neato.
My next game is the whole reason that I wanted to do this episode. Mm-hmm. Just any excuse to talk about this game.
It's Slay.
And it didn't really fit in any of the...
Jet Set Radio.
And it's called Jet Set Radio.
Is it really?
No. Oh. No. It's called Digital Devil Saga.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
Shin Megami Tensei game.
Yeah.
And just put your headphones up now, Ryan.
This game is not available on Steam, so I don't know how many reviews it would have.
Wait, which one are you talking about specifically?
So it's Shin Megami Tensei Digital Devil Saga.
Oh,
Saga. This might be the one that I played.
Volume 1 and 2.
Okay.
This game sold 150,000 units in the year that it came out, which was so far below expectations that it caused the company that made it to go negative for that quarter in their sales.
Wow.
And they still made volume 2, which is hilarious to me.
Yeah.
But this game was so formative to me as a teenager, because these kinds of ideas and concepts have never been introduced to me before. Mm-hmm. And it's really shaped like how I look at narratives in general and like subtext within a story. But this game is one of those games that I feel like is made so specifically for me in the themes of it and the aesthetic and music and everything. But after going back and playing this game and seeing people talk about the subtext in this game and like what all the different metaphors, because all the Shin Megami Tensei games tend to wrap their narrative around some kind of, like, they like to play with religious ideologies and philosophical ideas and stuff like that. And they do a great job with that. But I really feel like this game holds up and is actually a great JRPG, regardless of, even if you've never, just on its own, even if it wasn't a Shin Megami Tensei game, no, not a problem whatsoever. But this game basically is about this post-apocalyptic wasteland where these tribes are fighting each other endlessly. No one ever dies. Mm-hmm. No one knows why they're there. No one thinks about the implications of any of this. They're all kind of just pure logical beings. And all they do is fight because it's all they've ever done. And then one day there's this gigantic tower that unifies this landscape. It's like the center, I can't remember what it's called, but it's like the center focal point of this world. And one day your name is Surf, and your tribe finds this egg near this tower. And when you go to try and get to it, all these other tribes have like posted up, and now there's this big fight to try and get to it. And during the fight, this giant beam of light comes out of the sky and hits this egg, and inside the egg is just a woman. And whenever the egg is broken open, this like weird ethereal light that they almost look like wisps, like they're little individual beams of light that are like passing through the different tribe members and all these different gangs or tribes, whatever you want to call them. And basically when everybody wakes up from this situation, everybody has emotions now, but they have specific emotions. So in your tribe, one person is like only really has anger, and their emotions are always tempered in some range of anger, whether that's just like annoyance or fury or whatever. All they know is anger. And then someone else only knows joy. Someone else only knows sadness. And then there's like a tribe member who doesn't get any emotions and doesn't understand what any of you are doing anymore because he just can't relate to any of
Confusion
you.
Confusion is his emotion.
Confusion is his emotion. But the big thing is there is a voice that tells everyone to come to the tower, and you take the girl with you. Her name is Sarah. And the voice at the tower tells you that it's an angel and that this new power you've been given requires that you eat each other now in order to temper those emotions, or you'll just go crazy and you'll just go into a bloodlust and you'll turn into an animal, basically. And so it tells them, now your goal is to kill all of these tribes for real, because now people die when they die. And whoever shows up at the temple, once all the other tribes have been killed with Sarah, they will get to ascend to Nirvana. And that's the only way to leave this place now. And so the whole story is a really interesting story on its surface. But underneath that, watching all of these people deal with such extreme emotions and like the implications of what they are becoming, like this need to eat each other. So all these emotions just paired with the reality of the situation they're in makes a really interesting subtext. And it's all kind of wrapped in a lot of like folklore and religion. And the deeper you want to dive into the story of this game, the more rewarding it becomes to like learn about.
Yeah.
But there's a huge plot twist at the end of the game. And there's like a huge tonal shift in volume two of this game. But the actual game itself is like a JRPG with a very interesting leveling system. And it's very satisfying to play. It has that same Persona style, like turn-based system, where if you don't take full advantage of exploiting enemy weaknesses, you won't get additional turns and you just won't stand a chance. Like the difficulty really is all about your understanding of what the game is telling you.
Is it not the same team that did Persona?
It is.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah, it is Atlas. They've done so many Shin Megami Tensei games, and honestly, they're all good, but this one was one of the first that I ever played. And
the original, the first
one. It depends on how far back you want to go. I mean, Shin Megami Tensei itself, I think, goes all the way back to NES.
Oh, really?
But Nocturne is the first Shin Megami Tensei game that I played.
Nocturne.
And it came out right around the time that GTA 3 came out. And
I remember this game.
It was the thing where the government was like, we're going to regulate video games. Mm-hmm. And then the industry was like, no, we can do it ourselves. Don't do that.
Yeah.
And so GameStop, or I think it was Babbage's at the time.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Was like, okay, you can't buy an M-rated game without an ID anymore. And I wanted Shin Megami Tensei Nocturne. I didn't care about Grand Theft Auto. Right. And I remember being on like a field trip at the mall and wanting this game so bad. Like I like talking to people, but I don't just go up to strangers and strike up conversations. That's never been the kind of person I am. Yeah. But I wanted this game so bad that I literally went outside Babbage's and flagged just some adult woman down that I'd never seen in my life and was like, hey, I have the money. Will you buy this game for me? And she was like, why? And I was like, they just won't let me buy it. Like, here's the money right here. I literally just want you to give them the money. And yeah. She did. And she bought that game for me.
Wow.
I still don't know why.
And then you ask her, can you go in that gas station and buy me some beer?
Now I need weed and liquor.
Yeah.
For my sweet, sweet Nocturne game. And that game was like, I was like, dude, this Shin Megami Tensei series is on to something, dude. This game rules. And then, so I had high hopes.
That's what I thought about Grand Theft Auto. I was like, man, this game is on to
something. Man, I love stopping at red lights. This game rules.
And you never saw that woman again.
I've never seen, I couldn't even tell you what she looked like if I had. I hope she is. Shout out to you, man. You really shaped my identity.
That's right.
Unknowingly. I think she was like, is it bad? And I was like, no, it's just because that Grand Theft Auto game came out and now they won't sell these kinds of games to people. I don't remember what I told her, but
yeah.
I was like, please don't make me have any more conversation with you. I'm scared enough to even ask you to do this.
Yeah.
But so I had high hopes for Digital Devil Saga. Mm-hmm. And then it even surpassed that for me. Like, I think, depending on what your expectations are, the actual mechanical systems might be a bit simple for you. It's grindy because it's so hard.
Mm-hmm.
But I still think that anybody who enjoys like a classic JRPG is going to love this game. Mm-hmm. And this, for me, the narrative more than elevates it beyond the point of worrying about
I think
about
a good
that.
JRPG needs a good narrative. For me.
And for me, you know, typically I don't, I am not particularly drawn into most JRPG narratives. Mm-hmm. Like I, there are Final Fantasy games where I'm like, yeah, this is really interesting. But for the most part, I'm there for the mechanics of the mm-hmm. game. So this game really stands out for me as that kind of game. And I'm, like I said, it did not perform particularly well. So I think it's easy to find.
Is this the one that has Dante in it?
No, that is Nocturne.
That is Nocturne. Okay.
Yeah, they re-released Nocturne just with Dante in them. Okay. Don't know why. They actually re-released Nocturne on like an HD remaster on Switch last year.
I did know that.
So if you want to replay Nocturne.
Dante from the Devil May Cry series.
Correct. You have to beat him and then he'll join you. Basically, okay. He'll become a demon in your
Random,
army.
Right? Mm.
It is super random, but it was just Devil May Cry was so popular that they were like, how do we get this Nocturne game back up?
Yeah,
I'm kidding. I'm assuming it didn't sell particularly well either.
Yeah.
But if you want to play Digital Devil Saga, they're really cheap by themselves. Also, you can get both volumes and like a greatest hits thing for probably pretty cheap on eBay. It, just buy it and then emulate it. That's probably the best way to play it, unless you already have a PS2. But the soundtrack is great. They got like an actual J-pop artist to make the soundtrack for it, Etro Anime. Shout out to her.
Nice.
And there's really nothing about the game that I don't like.
No. Cool. Shin Megami Tensei 5.
The new one?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You played that?
Yeah, it's very... very hard.
Okay.
It's very hard.
So I should play.
I spent, I think, 3 hours grinding to beat the second boss in that game. And I literally, like, I was one turn away from dying when I beat that boss. And I was like, how? Like, I used all the elemental strengths against them. Like, I did everything I could to get an advantage, and I still was barely hanging on. And I just didn't have the time to grind that hard for every boss fight. The story is really interesting. It's easier to play. Like, there's just a lot of quality of life improvements.
It's easier to play.
No, it's easier to, like, get around. Like, you can fast travel. It's
more streamlined.
Yeah, it's not easier to beat, but right. It's easier to play.
Okay.
But I recommend, if you've never played Shin Megami Tensei,
mm-hmm.
it's definitely not a hidden gem. But we've already talked about Persona 4.
Right.
That's where I would start.
Yeah.
Okay. Or if you want something old school, there's a game called... Devil Survivor on the 3DS.
Mm-hmm.
That game is actually probably one of the best Shin Megami Tensei games.
Okay.
It's really good. And it's grid-based.
So DDS isn't on the 3DS. Missed opportunity.
Mystifying that they've made this oversight. I don't know what they were thinking. But that's my final game.
Woo!
You guys did 3, so I'm not going to bug you for any more.
I love the hidden
We're done
gems.
Now.
Okay.
Yeah, like I said, all these games should be pretty accessible.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Check them out. Let us know what you think. If you have any hidden gems, always leave them in the comments on our YouTube video.
Yeah.
If you're watching the
hidden gems.
Yeah.
Yeah, seriously.
There's definitely some hidden gems that I wanted to talk about, but then I went back and played and I was like, nope, can't recommend this game.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to mention games that I could recommend.
Yeah, I was going to recommend Into the Breach, and there's like 50,000 reviews on it. I was like, okay, I guess not so hidden.
I was
going to
recommend Majesty.
Yeah.
But it's just too old.
Yeah.
But the concept is original, and I wish they would. I almost wish I put it on my comeback. Like, this game needs a comeback.
Comeback, yeah. So, well, if we do a future comeback list.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cool.
Like, if you don't want to comment on our YouTube video, if you listen to the podcast instead or whatever, shoot us an email at didisavepodcast and let us know what your hidden gems are, and we'll read them on the episode. If anybody sends us some particularly crazy stuff that we check out, we might do a video of it in the future, even.
That'd be cool.
Anything that strikes our fancy necessarily. Sorry about the chair.
So sorry about the chair,
squeaky.
Guys.
Review us on whatever your podcast option is, whatever you prefer. If it's
whatever you prefer,
Spotify,
Apple Podcast.
Blue just Sky. Give us 5 stars. That's all we ask. Yep. All we ask is a perfect score.
That's right.
That's not that big.
It's simple.
Just don't review us at all if it's not 5 stars.
Yeah, that's right.
That's all I ask. Ask again. check us out on Blue Sky, TikTok at Did I Say Podcast. Wherever you go, that's what we'll be. And tune in next week for our next episode.
That's right.
Until then, Ryan, I'll let you start.
I refuse.
Don't forget to save, guys. Don't forget to save you. Yeah.